Information visualization researchers have been thinking about this stuff for quite some time, and they've actually worked a lot with psychologists to sort of figure out what works well and what doesn't work well in terms of our ability to perceive visualizations. And this has an impact on how we should actually go about constructing visualizations. And so this is something I'm going to get into a little bit today. Really quickly, just want to take a look at the next slide there. Of these two charts, now these two charts both show the same kind of information. What they're showing you is how many dollars you would need to spend in maintaining a vehicle per year. I don't know if it's in like regular dollars or in tens of dollars. And the question is, which is easier to read and why? And then, of course, each of these different bars or colors represents a different type of vehicle. And obviously, the right answer is the thing on the right. It's easier to read because it actually allows you to tell differences. And the reason it's easier to tell, some of the reasons why it's easier to tell the difference is because you can actually extract out the essential piece of information that you need on a per manufacturer basis, right? You can actually extract out that it costs $60 versus $62 versus $58 versus $66 or whatever it is. With the thing on the right, and you can't on the left. The other thing is there's a bunch of perceptual things that are going on the right that make it a little bit easier to read. One of the things that I want you to take away from this is that it's actually very difficult for people to understand areas, and it's very difficult for people to understand curved lines. Like, it's not difficult for them to understand what it means, but it's very difficult for them to make judgments about it, which is what we're asking them to do with the visualization on the left. We're asking them to judge relative areas rather than, and this is not something that they're able to do. Okay, so next slide. So at the end of this lecture, I want you to be able to identify characteristics of different data types, understand encoding in terms of marks and visual channels, and then relate different visual channel types to data types, and then understand and apply Stevens' psychophysical power law, and in terms of visual channels, define and describe accuracy, discriminability, separability versus integrality, and pop-outs. And then finally, to describe the dangers is using 3D and visualizations. The 3D thing I'll cover a little bit more in class because I think it's an important principle. There's an increasing desire to use 3D, but what the visualization and psychology literature has told us again and again is that people are bad at 3D. Do not use 3D. And so what we'll talk about is why 3D is so bad. Okay, so there's a lot of different data types. One way to think about it is that it comes down in sort of this tree type of thing. So you have data. There are three essential kinds that we need to be concerned about: tabular, relational, and spatial. And then in the tabular form, the way to think about it is that can this data be represented in a table? You have categorical, ordered, and then among ordered, you have ordinal and quantitative. So this is kind of all a nice sort of tree. So categorical data are things like fruit. So what type of fruit is it? Is it an apple or an orange? And what you notice is that this is a category. So apples are not necessarily better than oranges, and oranges are not necessarily better than apples. Next slide. So among the ordinal data, you have different shirt sizes, right? Small, medium, or large. And so there is a difference in terms of order. So that's where ordinal comes from. There's an ordering here, but medium is not the same, necessarily the same distance from small as large is from medium. Okay. So there's an ordering, but we don't know exactly, you know, what the magnitude of the ordering is. And then when it comes to quantitative data, this is where we're concerned about numbers, essentially. So lengths is a good example, 17 versus 23 versus 29. And here there is that difference between 17 and 23 is the same difference as that between 23 and 29, right? Next slide. So if you're thinking about relational data, these are the links between table columns, right? This is in relation to that. And then there's spatial data, right? So this is intrinsic position of something, right? So some of the geovisualizations have spatial data encoded in them. If you take a look at the next slide, I want you to think about each one of these different Facebook data and what type of data is it that's represented here. You think about ages, gender, how many friends you have, first names of your friends, all of your status updates, so on and so forth. Like, what are the different data types that are being represented there? Okay, so if you hit the next slide, something that comes from image theory, and this is related to visualization because it's a way or a vocabulary about talking about information visualization, is to think about everything in a chart as being a mark, which is a geometric primitive, and marks that are modified in different visual channels where you control the appearance of the marks. Okay, so examples of marks are points or lines or areas, and ways that you can control the appearance are things like position, where you put the points or lines or areas, in the vertical or the horizontal position, the color, the shape, the tilt, the size, right? These are different ways that you can control these marks, right? So if you think about any chart that you've ever seen in your life, a bar chart, or a pie chart, or a scatter plot, these are all marks somehow, right? And they are marks that potentially have some aspect of their visual channel modified. Typically, it's position, and there's a good reason for that, which I'll get into. But sometimes you might encode it with color or shape, right? So these are different approaches that you can do it. But the point is that there is this notion of marks and visual channels. Okay, the next slide. The point is this: you want to be able to think about your data or think about a visualization as being a combination, as showing sort of abstract data dimensions, right? So you have certain data that you're showing here, and if you hit the slide thing there, you want to be able to analyze it as a combination of marks and channels. So here we're showing actually four different visualizations, right? And we'll actually talk about the charts or the marks and the visual channels that are going on here. In the first one, if you hit the next slide, the mark is a line, right? Each data point is represented by a line. And the vertical position of that line actually tells you what the data actually is. So there's one channel being used here. In the next visualization, we have a mark of a point. These are points, basically. And they're doing two different channels where they're encoding information based on the vertical position and the horizontal position, right? So we're encoding two pieces of data here with this mark, right? An X and a Y coordinate. In the next one, we're actually doing three things. So again, the mark is a point, but rather than just vertical and horizontal position, we're also doing color. So presumably black and red mean different things. In the next one, now we're doing four different encodings, right? Vertical position, horizontal position, color, and size. And so we can actually continue going down this route. So I talked about a bunch of different channels, and you can imagine encoding your data now also with shape, perhaps. We talked about size already. Tilt. Right? All these different things. There's lots of different channels that we can apply here. And if you take a peek at the next slide, before you do that, there's a limit to how many channel encodings you should actually do, obviously. Perceptually, you should probably limit yourself to about three or four, because after three or four, they become very difficult to distinguish. And so that's something that we'll get into a little bit. So I want you to think about these visual channel types, okay? And actually, they have rankings, which is what's so interesting about this. So if you hit the next slide, here are some channel types that you can actually use to encode what and where information, right? The planar position, that's something the X and the horizontal and the vertical position. Color and hue, right, can be used to encode a sort of what question. Shape can also be used to encode a what question. Or a stipple pattern, which is kind of related to color and hue, but not exactly the same. How much questions can be encoded in using different channels. So if you take a look at the next, if you hit the slide marker there, you can actually see position on a common scale. This tells you that one is more than the other. Or position on an unaligned scale. This still tells you a little bit of information. You can use length, tilt, area, curve, so on and so forth. These things can be used to encode a value, a certain type of value. And so if you hit next slide twice, you'll notice that these visual channels are associated with certain kinds of data, right? So the categorical information are you would use the what and where channel types to encode categorical information, whereas you would use the how much channel types to encode the ordered information, right? Ordinal or quantitative information. And that makes some sense, right? Because with the ordered stuff, there is an ordering and there are numbers associated with these things. And you can actually see how these things would be numbered, right? In contrast with the categorical things, they're just different. And so you would encode them with these different things. All right, if you hit the slide marker one more time, there's grouping things. So containment, so you draw a square or a bubble around certain data points or marks. Connection, similarity, using other channels or proximity, right? These can be used to show relational information within the same category. Now, these visual channels are actually ordered on this slide. They're ordered, on a per category basis, so based on those purple headers. But it's ordered in such a way that it tells you which ones work best. Okay, so the ones at the bottom of the list, these are the ones that work the worst, or work very poorly. The ones at the top, these are the ones that work the best. And I'll actually tell you what I mean by what works best in a moment. So if you hit slide 25, one thing that you'll notice is that planar position works for every single one of these things. That's something that's kind of unique about this 2D space that we can work within when we're actually constructing visualizations. And then after that, the other thing to notice if you hit slide 26 is that the ranking actually differs for the other channels. Okay, and so a color bit works certainly well for categorical data, but you'll notice it doesn't work quite as well for order data. And I'll show you again what that means in a moment. Okay, so I talked about, so if you hit the next slide, I talked about how these different channels actually have differential ability in terms of our perceptual ability to kind of differentiate. And I'll show you what this means. So the point is, though, that if they have these rankings, that we should use, the effectiveness of this principle is that we should use the most important attributes with the highest ranked channels. This makes some sense. And so the question is, where do these rankings come from? What do I mean when I say that this one's better than something else? Well, it turns out that there are four aspects that we care about. Can we accurately understand this channel? Can we discriminate between levels of this channel? Can we separate visually between these levels of this channel? And there's a pop-out effect that's kind of neat too. Okay, so this is what I mean by accuracy. So if you hit the slide 28 there, there's something called Stevens psychophysical power law, which is really, really cool. And so this is a chart of a bunch of different stimuli. Okay, so intensity of the stimulus is presented along the bottom axis there, X, and the perceived sensation is the thing that you get on the Y axis. So here's something that's kind of interesting. With different stimuli, you get a different curve. Okay, and the curve is basically is a power function. So if you look at the electrical current one, I can continue to increase the amount of electrical current that you feel, but you feel it at a power law of 3.5, basically. So each increment feels really, really strong. And so your ability to perceive electrical current, not that great, after a really short period of time. So if you think about brightness, this is on the other end of the scale. Our ability to perceive changes in brightness, not that good. Okay. So what you want is a one-to-one thing, where if I increase the intensity of whatever the stimulus is, that you perceive the stimulus as having increased by that same unit. And so what you want is an N equal to 1. And it turns out that across color saturation, black and white lightness, area, brightness, and length, the only thing that really works well is length. Everything else we really suck at. And this is interesting, actually, right? Color saturation, black and white lightness, area. You'd think that these would be pretty reasonable. It turns out we're really, really bad at this thing. I think of particular interest in relation to that first example that I showed today is the area one, right? We're really bad at figuring out area. You can see it right there. The other thing is black and white lightness, it turns out we're not very good at. And so if you were constructing a chart and you decided to use the brightness level of the pixel to represent a certain data type, you should know that we're not very good at this one. It's not bad, but we're not very good at it. It's not a one-to-one thing. Length, again, is the only thing that we're really good at. If you hit the next slide, there are other things that affect accuracy at all. Turns out that if we put things on a common scale, people are very good at doing the comparison. So here you've got two blue bars on the left side, no scale. Are you able to tell whether these two things have the same length, you could probably make a reasonable guess. But it works a little bit better if it's framed. So if you look at the one in the middle, now you have this notion that there's a frame and that the frame is the same height. We can actually judge the whiteness, right? And we can actually judge that there's a difference there. And there, that's using something called Weber's Law. So yes, the filled rectangles differ between 1 and 9, but the white rectangles actually differ between 1 and 2. So actually, it's really different. Another way you can do it, rather than just framing it, is you can align it. So you can put it on a common scale. And that helps our ability to interpret sort of accurately. Okay, so this is accuracy. This is one of the ways in which we can evaluate these different channels. We can say that people are more accurate with length than they are with color, hue, or area right away. Right? So that's kind of cool. Next slide. So discriminability. How many usable steps do we actually get from this channel? So here what I'm showing you is, I believe this is the amount of bandwidth. I think this is bandwidth, but now I'm looking at it carefully, I'm not sure. It doesn't really matter that much. Let's assume that it's bandwidth. The amount of bandwidth between each of these different countries, let's say based on the trunk lines between the countries. And you can see that between some countries and others, there's huge lines, and between other countries there are kind of very, very tiny lines. And while it's easy to be able to say like where are the big ones and where are the small ones, if I were to ask you how many different line widths are there, you would have some difficulty. It's difficult to actually assess these different line widths, and it turns out that we're really bad at discriminating between different line widths. We're just not very good at it. If you take a look at the next slide, it turns out that we're also pretty bad at we're pretty bad at distinguishing between non-contiguous small ranges of color. So on the right side, if you actually looked at these different colors, you would actually say, oh, okay, these are different. I can tell the differences between these different colors. But if I were to kind of throw it into a visualization like you see on the left, and I believe these are sort of genome genetic stuff, right? So it's kind of using kind of the different colors to represent something different on each strand, let's say. You can see really quickly that it's actually very difficult in some cases to determine which shade of green is being used in, let's say, 7, right? If you look at the 7th one for humans, which shades of green are actually being used? And this is because they're in sort of non-contiguous small regions of color. We're not really good at this. It turns out we can only distinguish between 6 and 12 bins. For me, I'm actually sort of red-green colorblind a little bit. I can tell you that basically you're from 5 to 10 on those greens, on the greens on the top right-hand corner there. They all look like green to me. From 5 to 10, I can barely tell the difference between them. So when you stick them into the chart on the left, I can't tell the difference at all. next slide, separability versus integrality. So you can sort of flip through the next six or so slides yourself as we talk about these different issues. So here are four different charts. And if you look at the first chart, we're using position and hue as different channels, obviously. And what's great about using these two channels is that they're fully separable. You get two different groups. You can see it as two groups, the sort of four dots on the left, four dots on the right. You can also see that there are four red dots and four black dots. You can actually make that separation in your mind, and that's fairly straightforward to do. And there's and that works, right? So you can have these channels that are actually separable. It turns out that size and hue, they're not quite as separable. There's a little bit of interference. So here in the next one, you've got sort of blue and purple going on, right? And also different sizes. So what you should be able to do is you should be able to see sort of where the blue ones are and where the purple ones are, and also be able to separate that from where the purple ones are from where the blue ones are, right? So you can see there's a bit of interference. You can do it, but it's a little bit difficult to do. So it's difficult to discriminate, in particular for small items. On the next one, we're looking at size and width, okay? Or sort of size and two different dimensions, right? So we're looking at width and height. So imagine we're encoding two different pieces of information here. And here, there's some significant interference going on. And so are you able to distinguish between, are you able to find the different groups, right? One group is the group that is kind of fat in both the width and the height. Another group that's just fat. on the width one or just fat on the height one, right? And so it's possible to do this, but it's hard, right? You have to actually use your brain a little bit. And so here, what you get is an integral percept where the area or the planar size is actually interfering with your ability to find these different groups. Same thing with the last one, and here you're just kind of finding different red-green. So you're encoding red and green on the RGB channels, and they're just varying them in different ways. And here there's some major interference. Can you actually find the difference between the? Can you actually separate these different groups in those different ways? And here color and hue totally integrated, and so it makes it difficult to separate these two things. So here's the point. If you want them to be separable, then find channels that don't interfere with one another. If you actually do want certain groups to be interpreted as these are grouped together, then you can use channel encodings that interfere with one another, and you get integrality, which is kind of cool. It's not always desirable. It just depends on your needs. So if you hit slide 39, last major concept is pop-out. And so most channels have this ability to do pop-out. And this has a little bit to do with sort of how your brain does some processes sort of visual information. And the point is that if there's something sufficiently different, it'll sort of pop out. You don't even need to try. So if you look at most of these images here, the one that's different is going to pop out, right? For the first, on the first image there, the red one pops out. It's really different. On the next one, the one that's kind of slanted a little bit pops out. Next one is the big one pops out. The next one, the one that sort of looks like it's kind of popped in, sort of pops out, right, ironically. Okay, so there are some channels that have no pop-out, and what that means is that you actually need to search through each item to find, like serially, to find the item that's different. And in particular, if you look at the one on the bottom right, this is one where you're going to need to find the one, and you're going to need to look at each individual data item to actually find the one that's different, all right? So most channels have pop-out, some channels do not. And you may actually want to make use of this pop-out. Slide 41, there are some limits, right? Turns out that you can only do this one channel at a time. So for example, if I was asking, so on the right, they're trying to do pop-out using both color and shape. So if I was to tell you, hey, find the round circle or the red circle, this is hard. You actually have to look for it. It doesn't pop out anymore. Okay. So combination searches tend to be serial. Within a channel, speed depends on which channel and how different the item is from the surroundings. And so what's sufficiently different or pop out really means is that it's a little bit context dependent, but there are still these pop out effects, which is what's really neat. Okay, next couple of slides, I'm going to talk about some dangers of depth. And in particular, the point is this. A lot of the time, we are enamored with 3D. We think that this should be a great thing. And because what we see in 3D, right? This is the basic argument. Well, it turns out from Colin Ware, it actually turns out that these rankings that we talked about to this point, they're only for planar bits, okay? They're only for 2D visualizations. They're not for 3D. And it turns out we actually don't see really in 3D. We see in something Colin Ware says is 2.05D. And so, yes, we do see upright and sideways on an image plane, but to actually acquire depth information, we have to move our head and we have to move our bodies, or the objects have to move themselves. That's the only way we actually see depth. So in reality, we don't really see depth. Like at a snapshot at a time, we don't really get great cues. So we should avoid using visualizations that are using 3D. And here are some reasons why we want to avoid it. So here I'm just showing you a visualization. This is 3D. This is a network that's represented in three dimensions. Okay, and one of the things you can see right away is that there's occlusion. Right, things are getting in the way of one another. Right? You can't see past certain things. In this visualization, you cannot, in the main area, you can't see really how many nodes there are there. And you can't see which nodes are in front of which, right? So occlusion is a serious problem. You can build interactive techniques to get around this issue, but that introduces some complexity. So the example that we're showing here, actually, what happens is you can click on a node, and the node actually gets a little bit bigger. It grows in size, and then the edges that are around that node, they curve around the node so you can see the node itself. So here, you can actually see that that one node in the middle, it's a little bit bigger, and all the edges having curved around it. But this is obviously, we've added some interaction complexity. It requires clicking through these things to actually understand what's happening in this network. Next slide. So the other thing that happens is that there's perspective distortion, and this interferes with all size channel encodings, right? And the power of the plane is lost. So in this particular case, I think what they're doing is they're showing multimedia searches, the multimedia results from a search engine, and each one of these things is a different picture. But basically, you can see that just because we're trying to represent this these pictures in 3D, we use fewer and fewer pixels as we go back into the distance there. And so as a consequence, a lot of the information is lost just because we're trying to encode some perspective information in here. So in sort of Tufte terms, this is almost like chart junk, right? It's wasted data ink just to try to get that 3D effect. Last thing, next slide. When you have 3D, text becomes very difficult to read, particularly when it's tilted away from the image plane. So basically, to summarize really quickly, building 3D visualizations, generally considered a very bad idea by the research community. Not a good thing. Last thing that was really common earlier this millennia, is that immersion is not a great thing, is typically not a great thing. Depends a little bit on the context, but generally not considered a great thing. So the basic idea was, what if I immersed myself in my data? So here is a virtual reality room, sort of. And this is related to the 3D problem. Turns out that immersion is typically not helpful for abstract data. You don't need stereoscopic 3D. You don't need a sense of presence. It doesn't matter. And it turns out that what matters more is having more pixels. Resolution is the thing that matters the most. Pixels are the scarcest resource. And so you want to make use of those pixels most effectively. You can see that in each of these sort of virtual rooms, they have these charts and stuff like this. But a lot of the pixels are being wasted to try to provide a sense of immersion, right? It's trying to show you this room that you're in. Oh, there's a, you know... some of the pixels are wasted trying to show perspective. Some of the pixels are wasted trying to show all the other things in the room, right? So it turns out in the literature that it's very difficult to sort of justify using virtual reality at all. I want you to take a look at the next slide. Here's a visualization that basically is everything that you do not want to do. And for the purposes of class, I want you to think about what are the things that they're doing that they really should not be doing. Okay, that wraps it up. Thank you very much.